Tuesday will mark President Trump's 100th day in office.
President Trump's 100th day in office is coming up this Wednesday.
Tuesday is going to mark President Trump's 100th day.
Wednesday marks the 100th day.
On Wednesday of this week.
It's actually Tuesday.
Wednesday, April 30th.
Tuesday.
Wednesday.
If you count January 20th, his inauguration day as day one, then tomorrow is day 100. It's simple math. You just look at the calendar and count days.
It's simple math. 100 days was Wednesday. That's it. Not hard.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Good Lord.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
You can't even figure that
and
out.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
We're screwed.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, and Round Mountains, KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, up in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. So on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome to the Bradcast. As we reached the 100th day of the second term of Donald Trump's presidency, which was Wednesday this week, not Tuesday, as many news outlets reported for reasons that I simply do not understand. I counted and I recounted, including January 20th, the day that he was sworn in at noon, traditionally known as day one of his presidency. Though even if you only counted full days, that would put his 100th full day on Thursday this week, not Tuesday. Unless I'm just missing something. Is it a leap year and no one told me? Anyway, as we finally reach the 100th day of the Donald Trump's second term in office, which feels like the 1,000th day, well, we've only got 1,361 days from now to go. Anybody want to check that math? The one thing that everybody in the media do seem to agree on is that Donald Trump's approval ratings, both ratings for himself and for virtually every single issue, has just fallen over a cliff. In fact, his policy positions on every single issue are even more unpopular than he is. And he's pretty unpopular with several polls this week, including Washington Post Ipsos finding his personal approval ratings at 39%. That's the lowest since modern day polling began back in the FDR era. But just in case you don't trust those liberals at Washington Post, where owner Jeff Bezos has already handed tens of millions of dollars to the Trumps personally. Well, how about Fox News, where their latest polls show Americans' rating support for Trump on economic issues, supposedly one of his great strengths as one of the great businessmen of all times. They show his ratings with support of just 33% of Americans when it comes to his handling of, for example, inflation. Just 33% support his tariff policy. Just 40% approve of what he is doing on foreign policy. Just 38% approve of his policy on taxes, whatever that policy may turn out to be. And I suspect those numbers will plummet when Americans hear what that tax policy actually is. According to Fox News, Americans disapprove of Trump's handling of immigration issues, such as his handling of mass deportations. Though, in the only issue that he received positive ratings from Fox, he received 55% approval for his handling of the border, specifically, if not for immigration overall. Beyond that, his overall approval with Fox News in their polling stood at just 44%, which is down 5% from March and falling. And news from Fox is about the best polling news that Trump has received over the past week. Many organizations released their surveys to coincide with his first 100 days in office, leading Trump to declare on his failing social media site that, quote, the polls from the fake news are, like the news itself, fake. We are doing great, he said in all caps, better than ever before. Okay. He also went on to rail that pollsters should now be criminally investigated for election interference. If you can't beat them, threaten to jail them. That seems to be a pretty good tagline for the first 100 days of his second administration. I won't bore you with too many other polling numbers, though I will note, as we discussed on yesterday's program with constitutional law and impeachment expert John Bonifaz regarding the Trump ImpeachTrumpAgain.org campaign, that a poll released on Friday last week found that a majority of American voters, 52%, now support a third impeachment of Donald Trump just 100 days in, and that includes 55% of independent voters. And even 20% of Republicans would like to see him impeached. They somewhat or strongly support that. I will also note at the same time that CNN's polling finds 57% of Americans are either pessimistic or afraid about his second term, as he has been on a 100-day rampage attempting to tear down the federal government. And he's doing a pretty good job, though the federal courts aren't doing a bad job of holding him back where they can, though with some 41% specifically identifying themselves as afraid in the poll. Perhaps Trump feels good about that number, 41% of Americans being afraid of him, because fear is also a weapon that he does enjoy wielding, even against the people that he is supposed to be leading, supposed to be looking out for. But that fear itself might also be Trump's undoing, assuming he is not undone already, as nearly 70% of Americans believe a recession is likely in the next year under Trump's policies, according to the CNN poll of Americans from April 17 to April 24. And that was before the CEO of J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon, said yesterday that he felt a recession was likely the best outcome of where all of this is headed, unless Trump radically changes course. And while voters surveyed for these polls can only offer their opinions about whether a recession is ahead or not, it is the sort of it's kind of the one thing that pollsters poll on that can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If people believe that we are headed into a recession, well, they start to manage their finances accordingly, which can then result in, yes, a recession. Not that this economy needs much help to end up in a recession at this point. The U.S. economy, according to numbers released on Wednesday, shrank in the first 3 months of Donald Trump's second term as he rolled out his aggressive trade strategy, claiming that sweeping tariffs on the world would somehow strengthen the U.S. economy. They haven't. At least so far, gross domestic product, GDP, the key measure of overall growth in the U.S. economy, fell by 0.3% in the first quarter of this year. That is down from an increase of 2.4% in the last quarter of 2024 under the economic guidance of Joe Biden. The contraction of the U.S. economy, the first since the start of 2022, puts the U.S. on the brink now of a technical recession as defined by two quarters of negative growth. all of which comes amid a huge fail in consumer sentiment. The consumer sentiment dropped in April to 32% confidence in the economy. That's its lowest level since the 1990 recession, according to reporting by The Guardian today. On Tuesday, however, the New York Times reported that the worst is yet to come, with prices of goods likely to spike and or shelves turning up empty come Christmas, even if Trump changes course on his tariffs and additionally threatened tariffs to virtually every nation on Earth, except for Russia, for some reason. With shipping traffic now arriving to ports on the West Coast here from China set to be just one-third of what would normally be expected for this time of year. That, of course, given the absurd 145% tariffs that were slapped on the largest exporter of overseas goods to the U.S. by Donald Trump. And China is vowing to stand firm against him, as their foreign minister said on Monday, quote, "If one chooses to remain silent, compromise, and cower, it will only make the bully want to push his luck more." That's a sentiment that some in this country, at elite institutions like law firms, universities, and yes, major media outlets, might have been wise to take notice of before they decided to roll over and bend the knee to a Trump bullying that seems, at least 100 days in, frankly doomed to fail, ultimately, even if it causes enormous pain for countless millions of Americans and people around the world before then, before it all comes apart. All of that focused largely on the economic damage, of course, that Trump has done in just 100 days. It doesn't even speak to the cruelty of all of his other failing policies, the damage that it is doing that may or may not be repairable, and the utter incompetency of his administration and its largely unqualified, often utterly buffoonish cabinet. Joining us now for some of that and perhaps what all of this means moving forward into the second 100 days and the 1,261 days thereafter, if Trump and us survive it, is, of course, our own Desi Doyen. Good day, Desiree.
Hello.
And as you may have expected or even hoped, our two champion old school blogger friends who I think it's fair to say have been warning about, well, just about all of the nightmares that we're now staring down for not just the last 10 years or so of the Trump era, but for a full 20 years or more, as the Republican Party has slowly or not so slowly headed off the rails of reality, conservatism, and common sense. And the media and Democratic Party have sort of allowed it all to happen, dealing with it each step of the way, largely as business as usual, I am sorry to say. Until now, they just, you know, just look around. Obviously, things are very much anything but business as usual. Heather Digby Parton is the award-winning Salon columnist, best known as Simply Digby at her long-running Hullabaloo blog, and the man known as largely Driftglass, though occasionally as Bill. He is the co-host of the Pro Left podcast, produced each week, rain or shine, with his wife, Blue Gal, from what they lovingly describe as Flyover Country, Illinois, which I believe is shorthand for Springfield, though not the one in Ohio where Trump told us where he won a second term in office by pretending that immigrants were eating cats and dogs. Hey, guys, happy 100 days.
Happy
you
happy.
Too.
Delighted, sort of, to have you both here. So we've been talking to both of you at key moments over the past 100 days. From the very beginning, about what you were both expecting and or fearing and or warning about. So, Heather Digby, let me start with you. How's it going? Is this where you expected the administration to be 100 days in? And by the way, has it been either the longest or the shortest 100 days of your life?
Oh, the longest, no doubt about it. I feel like I've aged 10 years in the last 100 days.
Yep.
And
yeah.
That's not good.
Nope.
But, you know, I in some ways, I expected some of this, and they have exceeded my expectations in many other ways. I mean, I think we all knew that this was going to be bad. I didn't expect to see something like Doge come in and just randomly and recklessly just start taking a wrecking ball to the federal government. Mm-hmm. I knew they had planned to do a lot of these things, but I thought it would be a systematic thing based on Russell Vogt in the Office of Management and Budget. And he's doing his thing, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's probably the guy who's guiding RFK Jr. on the HHS stuff. And, you know, he's doing a lot of this. But the Doge thing was kind of surprised me, and it took up so much of the bandwidth in the early part of this 100 days that I was, you know, you kind of got distracted, took me off balance. Having said that, you know, it's awful. It's horrible. It's in, you know, I mean, we're watching the police state sort of just emerge before our eyes as they're doing raids on people's houses. They're making mistakes. They're sending people to a gulag. I mean, that part of it is absolutely horrific, along with, of course, the tariffs, as you just discussed at length. But I'll tell you what the upside here is for me, and I'm very surprised to see it. These polls show that the American people, they're seeing it. And I would not have bet on that 100 days ago, that they would, because so many of us, including me, you know, I mean, I think all of us were just, we were so shell-shocked by what had happened, so horrified at the prospect of Donald Trump for another 4 years and exhausted in advance of what it was going to take from us to pay attention to it. I did not realize that people were going, that most people were going to see him for what he is this time, because that didn't really happen last time. I mean, you know, it started to, and of course it was different then. It wasn't quite as chaotic as it is now, although it was chaotic in a different way, a lot of backbiting and palace intrigue stuff. But this, I have been feeling a little better over the last couple of days as these polls have come out, because I'm going, all right, I'm not alone here.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one. Thank God.
Yeah. You know, and you, yeah, you make a really good point, because one of the things I remember, never mind the first Trump administration, but the back in the George W. Bush days, one of the things that I remember was most alarming about it and frightening about it was, you know, looking around, seeing what was going on and feeling like, don't you people see what I'm seeing? Don't you, you know, don't you understand how terrible this is, how dangerous this is? And so many in the media were like, nah, you know, it's, you know, it's just Republican. You're just a partisan. And often it took a while. It took a long while before the polls reflected that with George W. Bush. But it does seem like Americans are getting it now, and that is a bright spot. Thank you for bringing that out. Driftglass, how about you? Has Trump 2.0 met or exceeded your expectations?
In quality, met my expectations. In quantity, exceeded it. It came on faster and through different doors than I thought. But, you know, in a lot of ways, he's just doing standard Republican stuff. He's, you know, that stuff has been on their dream list for a long time. Big tax cuts for rich people, smash the government, blame liberals and immigrants. And he's doing all those things. So he's just doing them, you know, big and loud with a sledgehammer instead of quietly behind closed doors in modest tones. So he's executing the policy he said he was going to execute. He's, like Digby said, using different means. He's using Doge or did. But yeah, this is pretty much where I expected us to be. But it's impossible to predict the future in detail, but it's real easy to see the trajectory if you step back and look at it. And that's really all we've been doing for 20 years is saying, do you see the road? Do you see the mile markers? Do you see where we're headed? And not a lot of people wanted to hear that. So I am here today to commit hostile and political acts. That's why I'm here.
Yes. Well, I will say it does sort of raise another bright point, and I have to kind of put quotes around that, because I've been thinking in recent days that, yeah, he really is doing everything, not only everything that he said he was going to do, but everything plus, everything that, you know, Republicans have complained about for years. And I mean everything. Government is too big, so let's cut it. Let's slash it to the bone. You know, get rid of anything that even smells like a so-called liberal policy. They are doing everything. And while I think it's going to hurt a whole lot of people, and it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to put, you know, Humpty Dumpty back together again, I think in one sense, am I wrong here, that it's good that they're doing it. So that, you know, we can't get to a, you know, the next election and they say, well, they needed to do this and that and this and that. You know, that's the way that we really need to see a Republican government. They're doing everything. And well, it all seems to be failing. And I think it's out front and people are seeing it.
As you hearkened back to the George W. Bush administration, which was successfully bulldozed down the memory hole the minute George Bush left office. One of the reasons I got into blogging was the 2004 election, mm-hmm. which was that just how the hell could you reelect this guy? How on earth, this incompetent, dry, drunk halfwit, and you put him back into office, you had these choices. And it really took a while before 2006 came along and everything started to go downhill really fast. Mm-hmm. And all the things that people said, this guy's incompetent, the war is a lie, it's a disaster, it's a quagmire, he doesn't know how to handle a crisis. And all of that came true really fast, back yep. to back to back.
Right.
And so by 2006, he got stomped.
Right.
And that I hope that is the dynamic playing out here. One other bright spot, though, with the ports being empty, looks like we're going to win the war on Christmas, Brad. And I think that's very exciting.
On that point, let me stick with the economic issues for a moment, because frankly, as horrible and scary and dangerous as everything else is that he is doing, as he, you know, sort of hopes to force us into authoritarianism and tyranny, it seems to me that ultimately it's the economy, stupid, that will be his undoing. If his own, not to, you know, quote James Carville for any particular reason, but if his own supporters are losing their jobs and watching their prices skyrocket and finding empty shelves by the time we get to Christmas, Heather, it seems to me impossible to believe that the Trump status quo can remain in place. The irony here, he could have had it so easy. Joe Biden teed up the economy in every measurable aspect. Trump could have just coasted, come in, pretended to do some sort of jiggering around the margins, and then taken credit for a skyrocketing stock market, a wave in new manufacturing, again, all stuff set up by Biden over the past 4 years, and declare that he did all of this, but he did not do that. Why did he not do that?
Because he's Trump. He doesn't make sense in so many ways. I mean, the truth is he did do that the last time. The recovery from the financial crisis was mm-hmm. very slow. Partially because of some tepid Democratic policies, which Joe Biden did not adhere to. He went full bore in ways that the Obama administration didn't do. He learned some lessons from that. When Trump took over in 2017, the economy was coasting along really nicely, and he took credit for it. He got his tax cuts done. He mercifully for us and really for him, he failed at banning Obamacare. And so he did that, but he didn't realize that was a smart thing to do. He felt thwarted in his big idea about tariffs. It's the only idea he's ever had. It's one that he got back in the 80s watching Larry King one night, I think. And the rest of it, you know, he just has never been able to let that go. And one of the things you have to understand about what Trump's ambition and his agenda for the second term is a lot of this stuff he doesn't even know what he's signing on these executive orders. It's mm-hmm. pretty clear that he's never even heard of it before. That's exactly what Driftglass says. It's the Republican agenda, Project 2025, mm-hmm. old long-standing stuff they've wanted to do, and he's just signing off on it. But there are some things that he actually cares about, and tariffs are one of them. And part of his ambition for the second term is to, we all know, get revenge on his enemies. But he also wants to prove that he was right about everything. He even wears a hat that says that mm-hmm. Trump was right about everything. So this is part of what he's trying to do. And I just think there was no stopping that. He feels absolutely compelled to prove everything that he's ever said was correct. And tariffs are one of the things. Now, he said today in a cabinet meeting, he said, this is what he's telling these supporters that you ask about. He's saying, China made $1 trillion with Biden selling us stuff, much of it we don't need. Somebody said, oh, the shelves are going to be open. Well, maybe the children will have $2 instead of $30.
Right.
And maybe the $2 will cost a couple of bucks more. You're sitting there going, this is what you're telling your people. This is what they're supposed to do. And can I just remind you of one thing?
Yeah.
These same people just 5 years ago had a complete meltdown tantrum over wearing masks for a couple of weeks in grocery stores. Right. They lost their minds over the idea that a restaurant was closed and they had to go get takeout. They couldn't get a haircut for a month and they went crazy. Remember, Donald Trump was president when that happened. So, you know, I don't know whether or not they're going to rebel over this. And if they do, they'll probably just blame Biden. But there is a precedent for his people losing it when they get denied something that they want.
And just to sort of stack on what I said previously, the fact that he is going for it on the tariffs, that he's, you know, believed that that's the answer to everything, and now he is actually doing it, is actually a good thing. We won't be able to finish this administration with him saying, gosh, I wish we had done more on tariffs, because he's doing it, right? He's going for it. Is a good idea or a bad idea? Good policy, bad policy? Well, we'll find out. I think we are already finding out. Mentioning that, the comments that Trump made in the Oval Office on Wednesday.
Meeting.
Cabinet meeting, was it?
Yeah.
This is what Digby was referring to there when he was asked about the trade war with China and, you know, counter to his claims. The fact that, no, China is not begging to negotiate with the U.S. They're standing up to the bully. Here's that audio, and then, Drift Glass, I'll ask you something about it.
I told you before, they're having tremendous difficulty because their factories are not doing business. They made $1 trillion with Biden, $1 trillion, even $1.1 trillion with Biden selling us stuff. Much of it we don't need. You know, somebody said, oh, the shelves are going to be open. Well, maybe the children will have 2 dolls instead of 30 dolls, you know? And maybe the 2 dolls will cost a couple of bucks more than they would normally. But we're not talking about something that we have to go out of our way. They have ships that are loaded up with stuff, much of which, not all of it, but much of which we don't need. And we have to make a fair deal.
Well, it's nice that Trump is deciding what we need and don't, but... Yeah, Drift Glass. Yes, China made $1 trillion. I'll assume Donald Trump's numbers are real there. When has he ever lied to us before about that sort of thing? But as he said, we got stuff for it. So it's not like, you know, they stole it out of our pocket. We gave them $1 trillion. They gave us the stuff, $1 trillion worth of stuff. That seems to be how commerce works. So what's the problem here? And, you know, will China back down here or will Trump? And as I sort of hinted at in my introduction, shouldn't we all sort of learn something from China's refusal to appease a bully?
Well, I, as you know, longstanding conservative policy is a great love of centralized economic planning, especially when it's in the hands of one guy. Right. So, you know, that's absolute Republican doctrine.
Uh-huh.
It's just, let me just say this about his base, first of all. Propaganda will take him pretty far because, I don't know, a few days ago, he said egg prices had fallen by 87%, way down. So he's, part of it is just lying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I think we need to factor into our assessment of where we stand, which is there are like 35% of the voting public, of the awake and aware, politically aware public, who just are unreachably brainwashed. And they will believe, like 1984, that no, chocolate rations didn't go down. They went up. Everyone knows they went up. So they will buy this stuff until it bites them personally, until it hurts them personally. Then they're going to go find a liberal to blame. Then they're going to go find Joe Biden to blame. Trump's already doing that. But the stock market, when it was, you know, doing great in 2024, this is the Trump stock market. When it's coming down in April, this is the Biden stock market. So he will just lie his way through his base. The people, however, I think that will be affected are the people in the middle, the wishy-washy fence straddlers who can go either way because both sides do it. When it starts to bite on them, those are the people you're seeing showing up in the polls like, wait a minute. I did not sign up for this. I signed up for the business guy to make egg prices cheaper, which he said he'd do on day one. And the rest of it's a bunch of blah, blah, blah. And I think we can learn a lesson from China. And frankly, from, I think, 4 governors, I'm including one of my own, J.B. Pritzker.
I'm going to get to him.
Yeah, go ahead. Who just aren't taking it. Who within their authority, on their soapbox, punch the bully back as hard as they can. And say you're not going to get away with this. We're going to stand up and we're going to stand up to you, and we're going to make you learn a lesson. Now that might fail if your megaphone or your wallet isn't big enough. That might not work, but it is the duty of decent upright, noble Americans to say no on every platform they can and to learn from the example that China is showing, which is push back hard, and this guy buckles. And at some point, his own people are going to start to worry about the next election. And that's when it's going to get really interesting.
Well, there's the old Chinese saying, may you live in interesting times.
Yeah.
I don't need it to get any more interesting, Bill. Now that I got a break here shortly, but now that 100 days has come and gone with Trump's approval rating absolutely in the toilet in really every poll out over the past week, Digby, as you mentioned, on every issue, do you expect that that any of that will lead him to change anything moving forward? Will he course correct, or will he double down, or will he do something else entirely, which is the answer that sort of concerns me at this point?
Yeah, I wonder about that too. I don't know if he's going, you know, it's so hard to tell. He's a little different than he was in his first term, in which he would, you know, back down or quote course correct when he started to get some blowback. And he got hit in those days. He had blowback from the Republicans too. There was still a faction that had some clout that could push up against him. They're gone. I mean, the whole entire Republican Party is just so lost. It's, you know, pathetic. And he does seem to be responsive a little bit to the business community and to the markets. And it's possible that could continue to have an effect as these tariffs hit. I think he was, taken aback because apparently he's living in a very, very tight little bubble where he doesn't even hear half the stuff that's going on around him. He doesn't know what's controversial and what isn't. He's thinking that I think a lot of it is he actually thinks that he's doing great because people are telling him that. And he's very busy playing golf and talking on the phone to his friends and, you know, doing some, you know, I don't know, redecorating the Oval Office to look like, you know, the
painting
Trump
gold.
Taj Mahal, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, he's busy, so he doesn't have time to keep up with everything that's going on. So he doesn't actually seem to be aware. But when he got a visit from the CEOs of Walmart and Home Depot and Target, and they come into the Oval Office and say, hey, man, you know, help us out here. We're going to have bread lines at Target here in another month. Yeah. Please, can you do something for us? And then he suddenly seemed to go, whoa, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? Empty shelves, huh? You know, and of course, everybody knew this was going to happen.
He hasn't done it yet. He said he's going to respond. They made it, you know, leak out that, oh, the Walmart, Target, and et cetera have concerned him. But he hasn't really. We still have 145% tariffs against China.
And I wonder if part of that may be because of that bubble that Digby says that he is living in, that the Treasury Secretary and the Commerce Secretary aren't actually telling him, hey, there's going to be some real big problems coming up. Oh, we've got some deals. We're working on some deals. But they don't have any deals, and he doesn't know that they don't have any deals. So
hundreds of them.
The thing that worries me the most is I think that if this continues, that instead of changing course and being more sane, they'll actually get more crazy to create even more crazy distractions to move the narrative, the media focus away from, you know, the crazy stuff that's been going on, the crashing of the economy potentially, that they're going to really start rolling out all of their really nutty things just to change that narrative.
Okay, now I'm really running late, but okay. I do want to allow, that's not your fault, I want to allow Drifty to get on this. Bill, this is usually the point in a Republican administration when they start a war to distract us.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about what Trump will do in response here to what he's seeing in the polls?
I don't think he cares about the polls. I don't think he's seeing real numbers. I think he believes whatever he wants to believe. You're probably going to bring this up later, but Terry Moran was in the White House and told him about a photograph, and he just kept saying it was photoshopped, and Trump, somebody lodged it in his brain, showed him a picture.
Stephen
Miller showed him a picture, a Photoshop picture, and now that's lodged in his brain. And anyone who tells him different is a loser from a loser network. You're not very popular, and it's all fake news, and you're a liar, and why would you even ask that question? So once he gets a really horrific idea lodged in his tiny, mushy brain, it stays there. And so I don't see any reason for him to back off of anything. He doesn't believe he's down the polls. He believes Fox News is conspiring against him. You know, he's in a sort of in a fascist death spiral. He's only listening to people who tell him what he wants to hear. And they will continue to tell him crazier and crazier things to keep him away from anything that they want to play with themselves. So, yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break here. We will continue with the fascist death spiral after after a few moments breather here. Speaking with Heather Digby Parton, of course, of Salon, and Digby of the Pro Left podcast. I want to talk at least about some of his immigration policies that you hinted at there and the pushback that he's receiving from the federal courts and the court of public opinion, of course, we've already discussed, but also from Democrats in Congress, for whatever that is worth. All of that is straight ahead on our special roundtable coverage with the great Heather Digby Parton and Drift Glass right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to the Bradcast.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, as we are officially now at or beyond 100 days into the second term of Donald John Trump. Welcome back to the Bradcast. We are speaking with Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Drift Glass of the Pro Left podcast. All right, guys, on Tuesday, in a pretty hilarious story, former Fox News weekend host turned Trump Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth boasted about ending a woke program on women and security that he described as a pathetic leftover from the Biden administration. But it turns out that Donald Trump actually signed that law into law during his first term. His Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, shepherded that policy through Congress. Trump's daughter, Ivanka, lauded that policy during his first term as one of its greatest achievements. And even his newly named chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the military lauded that specific policy during his recent confirmation hearings in Congress. So, a quickie for each of you off the top here. I know there's a lot to choose from, given the failures of so many of Trump's cabinet members just 100 days in. But any thoughts? Drift Glass, I'll start with you on who's going to be the first to get thrown overboard here as Trump decides that blaming his cabinet is better than taking the blame for so many of his own failures to date and theoretically failures as far as the eye can see at this point?
I don't think it's going to be Hegseth, because I heard someone say he's far too pretty to be tossed overboard. Uh-huh. He looks like the man that he wants in charge.
Uh-huh.
I think what kicks in here, frankly, is a four-word feature we have on the Professional Left podcast, which is no fair remembering stuff.
Uh-huh.
Which is just, nope, you know, we're just going to move on from that. We're going to ignore the story. We're going to ignore how this law came into being, who shepherded it through Congress, what it was intended to do. We're just going to keep moving on. And until Pete Hegseth accidentally launches a war or gets Eric Trump injured in a tank accident, nothing's going to happen to him. So I'm happy to be wrong. I'm very happy to be wrong. But I just don't see Trump admitting error under any circumstances, since that is absolutely something that conservatives refuse to do.
All right. And Driftglass comments just before the break, notwithstanding, I think Donald Trump does know how bad it is for him. He is going to start searching for someone to blame for some of this somehow. It sure seems like Pete Hegseth now attacking Donald Trump's own best policy from his first term. Seems like he'd be a pretty good target. Digby, what do you think as far as who's going to be the first thrown overboard?
Well, I think he'd be a good target, obviously. He's a complete imbecile and, you know, totally unqualified and making a fool of himself every single day as the Secretary of Defense. So you would think he would be the first one. But I'm going to take another guess. I think it could be RFK Jr. And the reason is, first of all, he also is a complete imbecile, and he is, you know, destroying basically the medical research in the United States, along with Russ Vogt, who's also doing it, the director of Office of Management and Budget. And of course, you've got DOGE, and you've got Trump, who's withholding, you know, the funding for the universities, which is almost all medical research. So they're basically systematically destroying medical research in America, which is going to be a big thing. I'm predicting here, and I hope this is true, that this becomes a much bigger issue. You know, the Democrats are always caterwauling about kitchen table issues, and you got to talk about this. And, you know, of course, tariffs and costs, the cost of dolls. I don't know, is that a thing? But apparently it is. I think that one kitchen table issue that people really do care about is, you know, I don't know, cancer, Alzheimer's, tuberculosis, you know, ALS, even measles, COVID, you know, all these things. These are things that every American has to deal with, and what they're doing to that. To the it's not just public health, it's medical research across the board, the funding for hospitals, all of it. It is devastating what they're doing. And I think this is going to bubble up to the surface pretty soon. And I think people are going to be very upset. And RFK Jr. is the guy I think that Trump's going to feel most comfortable tossing overboard. After all, he's a Democrat.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Good point. Very good point.
And I guess Tulsi could be let go also on those terms down the road as needed. Well, another failed Democrat I should have never let into my administration.
Exactly.
Driftglass has noted at the top, Trump is even failing among the public on his immigration and his deportation policies. The American public is rejecting by huge numbers, according to the major polls, even from Fox News, despite the fact that along with the economy, where he's also failing, his response to immigration and his promised deportations were the reasons that we are, you know, told why he was elected in the first place. But he's failing there as well. Where is he going wrong there? And why are even Republicans, at least in the polls, if not in Congress, beginning to oppose what he is doing there?
Well, he's busting. His people are busting down doors and dragging innocent people out in the middle of the night. And that story is getting out. And that could be your neighbor. And Democrats, to their credit, are flying down to El Salvador, who are making this a big deal, who are making people's individual names known to the general public, who are using their platforms to say, you know, we can all agree the immigration system needs fixing. That's why we have had several proposals for fixing the immigration system that this, I can't say it on the radio, has shot down. But what we can all, I think, need to understand is that if anyone without a visa can be locked up and deported overnight, you can be, because now we have no due process. Do we all know what due process is? It means you get to stand in front of a judge and make your case. If you are a citizen and they come for you and you have no opportunity to prove you're a citizen, you can be just as gone as they are. And that resonates with people.
I think that story, I don't know if you saw it, but it was just absolutely chilling that 20 members of, we don't know, U.S. Marshals, ICE,
in
FBI.
Oklahoma.
We don't know.
Oklahoma,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Broke down the doors to a woman and her three daughters who are all citizens in the middle of the night, took all of their belongings,
and
all
their
of
cash.
Their cash. They had just moved there from Maryland. And apparently they had the wrong house, and they're still trying to fight to get all of their stuff back, but they're absolutely traumatized. And yes, this happened in Oklahoma, and I'm kind of as horrific as that, as this was for those women, I'm kind of glad it happened in Oklahoma. Yep. You know, that sort of thing sure seems like it's going to make a difference among the American public in Oklahoma, where they love Donald Trump.
If they hear about it. So I think it has been good, as Bill says, you know, that having Democrats, congressional Democrats, go out and make a big deal about some of these things actually forces the media to cover it, because the public isn't going to hear about it if the media doesn't cover it.
And,
and that story did bubble up on local news in Oklahoma. It bubbled up there. So at least there's that happening, you know, that some of the whatever's left of local news is on the story.
And go ahead, Bill.
Oh, you know what's big out here in flyover country is soybeans and corn, which we like, and hogs, which we love to export to a little place called China. And suddenly everyone's remembering what happened the last time Donald Trump launched a trade war against China, and how soybean farmers were devastated in this area, and why it's, and now we have Midwestern Democrats who are pretty centrist. Now they have something to say, which is, you are going to destroy farmers. And this time you're bribing them with $15 billion of tax money will not save you. And now you have actual Trump supporting farmers who were dumb enough to vote for this guy for the third time, begging him to please, please don't do this. And that you have on tape. So that is bubbling up among people who care about agriculture, which is a whole bunch of people in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Nebraska, you know, the states where, other than Illinois, that Trump does very well.
Can I just add one thing about this that's also bubbling up where people are hearing it? And I think it is coming from local media, but also the national media. And this is the immigration thing, and it goes way beyond the grad students who were protesting for Gaza. That's a big story, and people do care about that. Abducting that, you know, a grad student's off the street, this weird thing with ICE. I think this is really not playing well at all. These ICE people are coming with, they're not wearing uniforms and they're wearing hoodies and masks and stuff. That is just weird. And that is very creepy. And I don't think people like that. We do expect these people to be wearing identifying, you know, uniforms of some sort so that people know that they're dealing with the government. Otherwise, it just seems like a bunch of thugs, you know, grabbing them off the street. Yeah. But they're also going after tourists and people who've been in the country for a long time. There was a story of a Laotian woman who'd been here since she was 2 years old. And they grabbed her up. She had an old marijuana offense that had supposedly been expunged on her state record, but hadn't made it to the federal side. They snatched her up and sent her to Laos, a place where she didn't speak the language even, and just threw her there. The same thing happened to an Irish woman from California, that they picked her up again on some old drug charge that had been expunged. They stopped her, they let her go, and then she came back to them with the documents showing that it had been expunged and that she was okay. She'd been here since she was a teenager. She's in her 50s now, and she has a disabled son that she takes care of. They threw her in the detention center in Seattle. Tourists are being detained at the border all over the place, being thrown into detention centers. And by the way, I mean, I hate to say this because it's so horrible for the Latinos in our country who are living in terror right now. But this is happening to white people, folks. This is happening to people just like you who voted for Trump. And it could be you. They're not discriminating. And whatever's going on with ICE and these private prisons and whatever financial motives people have for throwing people into detention for weeks at a time for no good reason, I'm sorry, that could happen to anybody. Be careful when you leave the country, because if you try to come back in, something really bad could happen to you, even if you're an American.
And it's been underreported, but countries around the world are giving warnings to their own citizens, don't travel to the U.S.
Absolutely.
Tourism is over a cliff, and it's sort of underreported as part of our economy, but it is a huge part of our economy. Tourism, people coming from around the world, you know, over the summer, visiting the national parks. That's not going to happen. That's going to be unbelievably costly to the tourism industry, adding to our economic woes. Yeah.
There's also, I mean, I have a stepdaughter who's graduating in a couple of weeks from a college in Wisconsin, and she's doing great. But what's way, way down at that college? International students. International students are not showing up in large numbers. And you know what? International students pay full freight when they come to American colleges.
Exactly.
Guess who's propping up a lot of those colleges is that money.
Yep.
And what I think is critically important for us to understand, and Digby does this really well. This is why Digby says is the slogan of the American blogosphere, which is stories always beat facts. And Trump told two stories to get elected, that immigrants are destroying your country, coming over the border, and Joe Biden is incompetent and destroyed the economy, and liberals are terrible. And we tried to combat that with facts, and it sort of worked, and it really didn't really work in the end. But what you have with these individual people being hurt by Donald Trump deliberately, you have stories. You have compelling, regional, specific stories that local media will be interested in. And that's what changes people's minds, who are so capable of changing their minds. So,
all right, I really do. I'm seconds away, so I'm going to from having to get out here. So, Driftglass, I'm going to count on you to be short on two questions I want to ask you very quickly.
Sure.
One, because they both concern your home state of Illinois. Your longtime, long-serving U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, second highest-ranking Democrat in the Senate, has announced he will not run for re-election next year.
Yep.
After five terms, 30 years, I think, in the upper chamber.
Yep.
Quickly, are you sad to see him go? And who would you like to see replace him next year?
Not sad to see him go. He's done a very good job for the bulk of his career. And I'm not sad to see him go. It's time for him to retire. Also, Jan Schakowsky, very, very good Democrat up in my former stomping ground up in Chicago, also retiring. I would like to see basically anybody who will take Durbin's seat and run with it. There are probably three or four hats in the ring right now. I know that Julie Stratton, the lieutenant governor, has her hat in the ring. So I would like to see any solid Democrat take the seat. And I think in Illinois, it's a pretty safe seat. So I would like to see a good primary fight. I'd like to see a lot of progressives in there. And I'd like to see a good left-leaning Democrat win that seat.
And speaking of left-leaning Democrats, your governor, J.B. Yeah. Pritzker, he's on an early swing through New Hampshire. He said last week, quote, they spent years watching Republicans illegitimately pack the Supreme Court, take away voting rights from people of color, systematically chip away at the constitutional order. Those same do-nothing Democrats, presumably referring to centrists or something, want to blame our losses on our defense of black people and trans kids and immigrants instead of their own lack of guts and gumption. As an Illinoisian, I think that's how you say it, what do you want America to know about your governor, as he's pretty clearly running for president in 2028? And do Democrats really want to elect their own billionaire to the White House after 4 years of Trump? Because he is a billionaire, in fact.
Well, in Illinois, as the song sort of goes, we love the governor. We all did what we could do. So, we're very happy with our governor. We know he's a billionaire. He didn't make a secret of that fact. The fact that he's a billionaire got him this office, because he could go up against the other billionaire who was there originally, was there first. And as long as he keeps talking like this and holding centrist Democrats to account and telling people we got to fight for our values, and saying that we all have to get our microphones and megaphones out, and we can't let Republicans rest even for a minute, not just Donald Trump, Republicans rest for even a second, I'm on board, because you know I would like to win, and I would like to win with someone who will fight for my values, and it certainly appears to be him. One quick, fast fact.
Quick.
When Jan Schakowsky originally ran for office in 1996, do you know who her primary opponent was?
I do not.
Who lost to her?
No.
J.B. Pritzker.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. So he's been doing this for a while.
Digby, I have not forgotten about you. You get 30 seconds as well. Anything you would like America to know, just for fairness here, about your governor, Gavin Newsom, who is also obviously running for the top job in 28, though seemingly very differently from J.B. Pritzker. He's apparently trying to make nice with not just the middle, but the folks on the right of late, like Steve Bannon. You want to speak up for him?
What a misfire. I mean, what a misfire. He had the reputation going into the cycle of being the fighter, the guy who was prepared to go. He was debating Ron DeSantis. And he was doing it well. And everybody was kind of going, maybe he's a little slick, but he's good. You know, we'll go for it. Now he's just completely thrown it to the wind. I mean, if he is going to run, he's going to have to make a real hard pivot here and try to recapture some of that, because what he's done lately has been just awful. And I just want to put in a word for J.B. Pritzker too, because I think that speech was great, and I think he framed the critique against Democrats exactly right. It wasn't like stop talking about woke and blah blah blah. It was talk about your values and don't sit here and and go after the other side and fight. And it wasn't one of these, it wasn't this kind of stuff that we're hearing from others, even some people on the left who were, going on and basically saying Democrats are cowards or whatever. I mean, I think Pritzker framed it perfectly, and I hope everybody takes his example.
Wow. Hey, Gavin, if you've lost Digby, as they say.
He never really had me.
I see.
True.
Yeah, but he was pretty good. Yeah, yeah, I was giving him. Yeah.
All right. We'll see. We've got 1,600 something days until we have to worry too much about it. And I suspect we'll talk with Digby and Driftglass before we get to the 200 day mark.
Although I will say, just a little last moment, they're not acting like people who, the Republicans are not acting like people who think that they're going to be facing really important elections coming up. So I'll just throw that in there.
Not yet, but they will.
I agree.
They will soon.
I'll bet.
They can run, but they can't hide.
We all agree on that, at least. All right, got to get out. Hey, thanks, guys. Always a delight speaking with you. Heather Digby Parton. You can find her work at salon.com and, of course, every day at digbysblog.net. You can also find her on the blue skies at digby56. You can find Driftglass on the blue skies as well. He is simply Driftglass over there. And you can and should download his podcast each week from proleftpod.com. Thanks, guys. Like I said, we'll certainly talk to you on the 200-day mark if anybody can figure out what that day actually is. But hopefully we'll speak with you before then as well. Thanks much.
You bet.
Thank you.
All right. All right, and I got to get out as well. You can find me at the Blue Skies if you wish. I am the Brad Blog over there. Desi Doyen is
at Green News Report.
Green News Report on
Blue
Skies.
Please come by and say hi.
And beyond that, if you missed any portion of today's show or any other, or want to give it another listen, share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do so for free at bradblog.com or your favorite podcast site. All we ask is that you consider stopping by bradblog.com to help us stay on your public airwaves, to continue to be right year after year after year on damn near everything. Or at least to speak to guests who are right on damn near everything. We need your help to do that. Stop by bradblog.com.
/donate.
Hit a button. Or, yes, go to bradblog.com/donate. Help us stay on your public airwaves. We need you right now. More than ever, really. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. I already told you where to find me on social medias. That's it. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
100 days, 100 nights to know a man's heart.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.